I want to talk about a story that is in the Bible, one of the great tests of all time. It's in the book of Genesis, chapter 22. You're very familiar with it, I know. But let's read it and see what we come up with here. Genesis chapter 22. Now it came about, verse 1, after these things, that God tested Abraham. I'm reading from the New American Standard Version. And said to him, Abraham. Now, you know, before his name was Abram, A-B-R-A-M, which meant an exalted father. You're a father, you're an exalted father. But now he was called Abraham, or Abrahim, meaning the father of many, the father of a multitude. So here he says, Abraham, now the Masoretic text just says, he said Abraham. But the Septuagint version, which is the Greek translation of the Hebrew, actually puts two Abrahams in here. Abraham, Abraham, sort of like the very ending of it. Abraham, Abraham. And he said, here am I, here I am. And then God said, take now your son, your only son, whom you love, Isaac, and go. Now this is an imperative Hebrew verse, and go, it's a command, you see, sort of like in, the only other word like this, which was a command, is in Genesis chapter 12 and verse 1, the only, where he actually gives him a direct command like this, and it's in where the word go is. You go, remember, go to what? Go to the land of Moriah. Well, in Genesis chapter 12, go to the land that I will show you. Abraham, get out of your area. Go from here to the Chaldees. It's a command word. Go. Go to the land of Moriah and offer him there, your son, as a burnt offering. Now, you know, there are various kinds of offerings. You know what a burnt offering was? You know, in most offerings, you come in, I want to offer this as a thank offering. I want to offer this maybe a sin offering. Many of the offerings, the priests then had a right to take some of that offering, and they won't, can you, I'll give you this part, and I'll take this, and the priests take it, part of the offering. But a burnt offering, nobody takes it. It is completely consumed. It's a whole offering. It is completely burnt up. That's the offering to God, complete. There's nothing held back, nothing. It's all there. I want you to go and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains of which I will tell you. I'll let you know where that is. Now I want you to think, you're Abraham. You have waited how many years for a son? From the first time of the promise and when you were 75, all the way to the time when you were 100 years old, you now have this son that you've waited, the son of promise, the son that's supposed to come from my wife, Sarah, who was way beyond childbearing years. And it was a miraculous son given to you. This son will be what? He will be, you know, in him will all the nations, you know, all you'll have all this. In Isaac shall your seed be called. Do you remember that? And all that, all these things. Now here you are, Abraham, and God says, I want you to go to the land where I will show you, and I want you to offer him as a burnt offering. Now you go to bed that night, right? Because notice verse 3, so Abraham rose early in the morning. Now, 4 or 5, I don't think he could sleep much. What is this about? You know, God gives me this promise. I'm supposed to burn this kid up now to God. I'm supposed to do it. What am I supposed to do here? How am I thinking? So here Abraham gets up, okay? He rose up early. I mean, he doesn't say, I'm not going to do it. He starts immediately in the obedience of it and does it. And saddled his donkey and took two of his young men with him, that is servants, young men servants, and Isaac his son. And he split wood for the burnt offering and rose and went to the place of which God had told him. On the third day, now they're moving. In his mind, Isaac is dead. 3 days, Abraham raised his eyes and saw the place from a distance. Abraham said to the young men, now he comes up, he sees this place. This is the place I'm supposed to sacrifice Isaac. He says to this young man a very interesting statement. Stay here with the donkey, and I and the lad. I don't think any of them knew what he was going to do. And certainly Isaac didn't know. And these young men didn't know. We're going up here. We're going to do something. We're going to make an offering to God, a burnt offering. And so he says, stay here with the donkey, and I and the lad will go over there. See, there it is. We're going to go over there. And listen, and we will worship. This is part of our worship. And return to you. The verbs are for both, okay? We will worship and return to you. What kind of a faith was that? What did he have in his mind? Well, Hebrews chapter 11, verse 17 talks about his faith. Here's what it says. Hebrews 11, beginning in verse 17. By faith, Abraham, when God tested him, offered Isaac as a sacrifice. He who had received the promises was about to sacrifice his one and only son. I'm reading from the New International Version. Even though God had said to him, it is through Isaac that your offspring will be reckoned, Abraham reasoned that God could raise the dead. That's why he could say that. We're going to go up here, and we'll be back. Because, see, God had promised me a son, and it's through this son that my seed will be reckoned. And I know God's promises are absolute, and I did everything to obey God. So I don't care what I have to do. If I have to burn him as a burnt offering, I'm going to burn him, because God is able to raise the dead. And figuratively speaking, he did receive Isaac back from the dead. From death, he received Isaac, because in his mind, Isaac was dead. But God will give him to me, because God keeps his promises, right? So in verse 6, Abraham took the wood and the burnt offering, he wood of the burnt offering, and laid it on Isaac. Okay, here's the wood. You carry the wood, son. And he took it in his hand, the fire. Now, I don't know if it was a fire from the campfire the night before. You can take a stick and it's burning or something. I don't know what it was. It could have been a smoldering log that was burning and he just carries it up and it's like a torch. Or was it a piece of flint, the source of the fire that he was going to strike? We don't know what that means. He did take the fire. It says he took in his hand the fire and the knife. The knife. You have to cut the throat of the animal, the burnt offering. So the two of them walked on together. This is verse 7 now. Isaac spoke to Abraham, his father. He said, my father, he said. He said, here I am, my son. And he said, behold the fire and the wood, but where's the lamb for the burnt offering? We're supposed to go up here and make a burnt offering. Where are we going to find this lamb? Abraham said, God will provide for himself a lamb, the lamb. God will provide for himself the lamb for the burnt offering, my son. I must have just killed him, just saying that you're not going to tell him. And so they walked. They walked on, the two of them walked on together. Verse 9, then they came to the place of which God had told him. And Abraham built the altar there and arranged the wood. Okay, get all the get the wood so it's going to go up in flames very fast, burn and consume, make sure that whole wood is going. Yeah, there's a certain way to arrange wood for a really great fire. You know, some people don't know how to arrange it and it doesn't do a good job. But you can arrange the wood in a certain way and it's going to catch on and it's going to burn and it's going to burn hot and it's going to burn fast and it's going to consume. So he arranged the wood properly, okay? And he built an altar, arranged the wood, and bound his son, Isaac. Now all of a sudden, come over here. I'm going to tie you up. And his son, you know, and his son's pretty much a grown man. And he ties him up. Bound his son, Isaac, laid him on the altar of wood. Now you talk about obedience to his father. He didn't scream. He didn't yell. What's going on? You get right here. You stay here. He laid him on top of the wood. Abraham stretched out his hand. Now he grabs the knife. He stretches out his hand, and he took the knife to slay him, to slay his son. Verse 10. But the angel of the Eternal called to him from the heaven and said, "Abraham, Abraham." And he said, "Well, here I am." What? You know, what do you want? And he said, "Do not stretch out your hand against the lad and do nothing to him. For now I know that you fear God, since you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me. I know you fear God because you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me." First person. I know you fear God because you haven't withheld your son from me. Who's me? Who's speaking? The angel of the Eternal, which is, of course, the angel of the Eternal is a statement that implies the personification of God. The angel of the messenger, because if you see and you read all the statements, and I've gone through this before, the angel of the Eternal is God. You see, the angel of the Eternal is God, angel of the Lord. And that's the angel of Yahweh. That's what it says. The angel of Yahweh called to him from heaven, said, "Abraham, Abraham." And he said, "Here I am." He said, "Do not stretch your hand upon me. Now I know that you fear me because you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me." Then Abraham raised his eyes, looked up, and behold, behind him was a ram caught in the thicket by his horns. Abraham went, took the ram, and offered him up for a burnt offering in the place of his son. Abraham called the name of that place. Now he's on a mountain. He's on a hilltop. He's on a mountain. He's on a higher place. It's a high place. Abraham called the name of that place Yahweh Jireh. Yahweh Jireh, or Jehovah Jireh, or however you want to say it. The Eternal Jireh. Which meant the Eternal will provide. Or another translation is God will see to it. God will provide, or the Eternal will see to it. Now, it's interesting that Abraham, you know, in the time of Moses, God revealed himself as Yahweh, the tetragrammaton, the four letters, and God called himself by that name. And he said, before this time, he told Moses, before this, I was not known by Yahweh to the people before this. But here we have statements that Yahweh was here. Abraham called him. What did he call the name of the place? Now, it could have been a redaction later on by Moses. It could have been that Moses said, "Okay, you know, that's why I call him," and I'm sure Abraham didn't know it, but I'll put it in here because, you know, the first five books were supposedly written by Moses, right? He gets the credit for the books of Moses. So God will provide, or the Eternal will see to it. Yahweh, the word is Yahweh, Jireh, J-I-R-E-H. God will see to it. God will provide. As it is said, this day in the mount of the eternal, it will be provided. And so there's another redaction all the way when the time of Moses, as it is said to this day, the mount of the eternal, it will be provided. Then the angel of the eternal called to Abraham a second time from heaven and said, by myself I have sworn, declares the eternal, because you have done this thing and have not withheld your son, your only son. So God swears. Who does he swear by? When God wants to swear, you know, he wants to take an oath. Who does he swear by? He swears by himself. And you see this in the book of Hebrews, chapter 6, dropping down to verse 13. Hebrews 6, verse 13. When God made his promise to Abraham, since there was no one greater for him to swear by, he swore by himself, saying, I will surely bless you and give you many descendants. And so after waiting patiently, Abraham received what was promised. Men, this is continuing, Hebrews 6, verse 16 now. Men swear by someone greater than themselves, and the oath confirms what is said and puts an end to all arguments. Okay, I swear, I promise you, you know. Because God wanted to make the unchanging nature of his purpose very clear to the heirs of what was promised, I'm reading from the New International Version, he confirmed it with an oath. God said, this is so that by two unchangeable things in which it is impossible for God to lie, we who have fled to take hold of the hope offered to us may be greatly encouraged. God swears at him, he gives this unchangeable oath. I swear by myself. And that's what he said to Abraham. By myself I have sworn, declares the Eternal, because you've done this and have not withheld your only son. In verse 17, this is back to now Genesis chapter 22, verse 17. I will greatly bless you, and I will greatly multiply your seed as the stars of the heavens and as the sand which is upon the seashore. These are metaphors. They're not to be taken literally, you know. They're to be metaphors because they are used of Israel and when they went into the land of promise. I mean, you look at your great people in the time of David. David said the people are like the sand of the seashore and the stars of the heavens from Numbers. So it's a metaphor of very many, a lot of people, hard to count them all. I will greatly multiply your seed they'll be like the stars of the heavens, the sand of the sea, which is on the seashore, and send you, and your seed shall possess the gate of their enemies. In your seed, all nations of the earth shall be blessed, because you have obeyed my voice. So Abraham returned to his young men. Here he comes back now, just like he promised. He said, you know, we're going to go up and worship, and you know, and we'll be back. He returned to the young men, and they arose and went together to Beersheba, and Abraham lived in Beersheba. So here's God's, here are the words, Yahweh Jireh. What was it that Abraham expected God to provide? He calls it God will provide. Yahweh Jireh, the Eternal will provide. The Eternal will see to it. That's another way you can translate that Jireh word. Well, we generally think of outward things, you know, and like food and clothing and safety. And it's not a wrong interpretation at all. Not at all. Because, you know, Jesus said in the book of Matthew, chapter 6, verse 25, for this reason I say to you, do not be worried about your life as to what you will eat, what you will drink, nor for your body as to what you will put on. And then Jesus says, isn't your life more than food and your body more than the clothing? I mean, Life is more than just eating something. It's, you know, we think and we achieve and we create and we do things and, you know, we show mercy and we show love and we develop character. And it's a lot more than just the food we eat. Look at the birds, Jesus said in chapter 6, verse 26. Look at the birds of the air, that they do not sow nor reap nor gather into the barns. No, but they pick out your stuff. They pick the fruit off the tree. They don't reap and gather into barns, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not worth much more than they? And who of you, by worrying, can add a single hour to his life? And why are you worried about clothing? Observe how the lilies of the field grow. They do not toil, nor do they spin. Yet I say to you that even Solomon in all his glory clothed himself as like one of these. Not even Solomon in all his glory clothed himself like one of these, like one of these beautiful flowers. But if God so clothes the grass of the field, which is alive today and tomorrow thrown into the furnace, will he not much more clothe you, you of so little faith? Do not worry then, saying, what shall we eat? What will we drink? What will we wear for clothing? For the Gentiles eagerly seek all these things, for your heavenly Father knows you need all these things. God knows you need food, you need clothing, you need shelter, you need a place to eat, you need something. You know, he knows you need that. But seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be added to you. So do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will take care of itself. Each day has enough trouble of its own. You don't need to worry about tomorrow. Just take care of today. So, what was it that was provided? What did God really provide? Yeah, I think there's a deeper meaning here. That he who supplies the food for the ravens, of course, and dresses up the lilies of the field will provide for us, yes. But there's something bigger, deeper than that. What was it that God provided to Abraham? And what is it that God will provide to us? God provides a way to do the most arduous and difficult duties, which, when they're commanded for us to do, and may seem absolutely intolerable and impossible for us to do that. And the nearer we come to them, I mean, on the way to do it, the nearer we go. I mean, you think about what Abraham thought. This is impossible. God's asking me to do something that's so strange. After 25 years, I wait for this son, and all these years, and now he's growing and he's developing, and he's going to be the heir to, in Isaac shall your seed be called. Now he wants me to sacrifice him. Well, what does this mean? A very difficult task. But the nearer we come to doing that task, the more dreadful sometimes it looks, and the more impossible it seems to look. But the closer we come to the answer of God's help. When our heart and our mind is yielded to God to obey him, when we're ready to do the thing that God has commanded us to do, there seems to open up before us a possibility provided by God, and then the strength that comes with that possibility, which becomes equal to the task we have to do. Some unexpected gift, like that ram caught in the thicket, will put into our hand and enable us to do the thing which we would naturally say, I can't get through this, I can't bear this, this is too much, I can't do it. You'll say, my heart will break, my mind will just go crazy, I don't think I can get through this, but something will help you. If our hearts are set to obey God, to do the command, then we move toward it and we get more. The command gets easier as we get there closer to doing it, because it's going to ensure that God will help us do it. That's another word. God will see to it. God will provide. What will he provide? He'll provide us with the means to do his will. This is the main thing, I think, that God provides for us. And it's probably the highest provision of all the things he provides that he can make. Because there is nothing in this life that we need so much as to do the will of our Father, which is in heaven. Isn't that what Jesus said? I'm here to do the will of the Father. All outward wants, our clothing, our shelter, our food, are nothing in comparison with having the ability to do the will of our Father. The one thing worth living for, if we have it, we are blessed, and if we miss it, we are miserable, is obedience in the heart of the commandment of our Father. Obedience in our heart to that commandment. So all of God's gifts, and God gives a lot of gifts, right? He gives lots of gifts. The best one that we are made ready for is to be ready for any required service to God. Of all of God's gifts, is to get us ready to perform and to do what God requires of us. When we get to the place where Abraham was, we shall find some lamb caught in the thicket by its horns, or some animal, and heaven will supply what is needed for our burnt offering. It seems probable that the bare mountaintop, which Abraham saw afar off and named Yahweh Jireh, or Jehovah Jireh, or the Eternal Jireh, the Eternal will see to it, the Eternal will provide. That mountaintop at that time that Abraham was there, most scholars now believe that mountaintop was the mountaintop on which Solomon's temple was built. That's where that was built. That was the place of the altar of burnt offering later on for all Israel. And when people came up there, they all came up there to what? To make a sacrifice to God, the sacrifice to his will. And perhaps the wood was piled on the altar on that very piece of rock which stands visible, though the temple and the altar now have long since gone, and which for many years the place of that altar on which the sacrifices of Isaac were offered, or sacrifices of Israel. Many years Israel offered it, the same place where Isaac was going to be offered. Now, I don't like to force Christian meanings totally into all these stories, of course. But the spiritual elements, you know, cannot be overlooked. Cannot be overlooked. The great truth is that there is only one sacrifice which God accepts. And that is the sacrifice which he himself provides and has provided for us. Abraham took his son, his only son, but he didn't have to sacrifice him. In place of his son, there was an animal sacrificed. But in the place of God's son, what happened? God sacrificed him completely. God will provide the lamb. And God's lamb is the lamb that takes away the sins of the entire world. God asked from Abraham less that he is willing to give to us and that he gives to us. He will ask less of you than what he was willing to give to you. Abraham's devotion was sealed and certified because he did not withhold his son, the only son, from God. And God's love is sealed because he has not withheld his only begotten son from us. He seals his love with that statement. Now, when is it that God provides it? And we say God will provide. Well, when does God provide? In this case, at the very last minute, the very last second. He's got the knife, going to do it, and, you know, or slice his throat. And Abraham, what do you want? Don't do it. Don't cut your son. Don't kill your son. At the very last minute. You know, the Bible says, when my feet had nearly slipped, you know, God helped me out. When God delays, he doesn't do that to play games with us or toy with us, but for our good. We need a sense of need as well as the experience of being delivered. At the last moment, and never before it, never until we have found out how much we need it, and never too late, comes God's help. So it's provided for the people that quietly and persistently walk the path of righteousness, walk the place of obedience to God. God will see to it. He will provide it to the people who serve and continuously walk in his ways. The condition of our provision is our obedience in our heart and in our will. To Abraham, doing what he was commanded, though his heart must have been breaking as he did it, the help was granted, just as it always will be. Now, what did Abraham name that mountain? He named it God Will See To It. Yahweh Jireh, the Eternal Will Provide. Now think of the ways he could have named it. He could have named it about his own struggles. You know, when Hitler wrote his book, he named it Mein Kampf, mean my struggles. Abraham could have named the mountain My Struggles, where, you know, where I, my deliverance, where God delivered me, and how God delivered me. Isaac's almost death, or, you know, he could have named it a whole bunch of things. But he didn't name it after himself. He didn't name it after his trial. He named it in a way that proclaimed God's deliverance. God will provide it. He did not say anything about his agony. He didn't even say anything about his obedience. Let's name the place where I obeyed God to the full, where I was tested and I won. I served God all the way to the end. He didn't name it any of those things. He named it for God. God will, Yahweh will provide it. The Eternal will provide. So God spoke to Abraham about his agony and trial. Okay? God spoke about, I mean, it was God who speaks about Abraham's agony, not Abraham who spoke about his agony. He did not want these things remembered. Abraham didn't even care about it. He didn't talk about it. We have statements in the Bible about Abraham's agony. You see it here, enumerated in Hebrews and all that. You can read it in the Genesis chapter 22. But Abraham doesn't talk about it. He never spoke about it. Yeah, there are a lot of bare, bald mountains there. And there will be a lot of bare and bald mountains in your life and mine. And we have names We'll name a lot of them. You got to look back on your past. You know, I remember that situation. We had to overcome that. Oh, yeah, we got through that. Oh, man, this was a very difficult time. I got through that. You'll have a lot of names for the mountains. Are they names that commemorate our own sufferings? Or are they names that commemorate God's blessings? When we look back on our own past, what do we see? There are times of trial and times of deliverance. Which side of the wave will we choose to look at? The one that comes this way or the one that comes the other way? The one that is smitten by the sunshine or the one that is black and purple by the shadow? So we all have things happening to us. How do we look at our lives? What will we think? What will we look in our memories of all the chaos and difficulties that have happened to us? What will we name them? This name enshrines the duty of commemoration. Yes, the duty of expectation. He didn't say God did provide, did he? What was that? What was the name? Yahweh Jireh. He didn't say God did provide, another past tense. It was what God has provided. He didn't say that. He looked forward, as you and I must. God will see to it. God will provide. Well, how do you know that, Abraham? I mean, you're way back here in this time. How do you know when you've named this mountains for a future thing, God will provide? And Abraham probably would answer, well, because God did provide. I know God will provide because God did provide. Yes, our resources may give out. Our patience, you heard some patience about patience in the sermon, our patience may become weary. We have to think of God not just as the storehouse, but also as, in a sense, the soil from which comes the same crops of rich blessings for the needs of the hungers of everybody. And so we look back upon our own lives, and we see many a mountain peak gleaming in our memory. Those are the mountains, our trials. We can name them, but let us name them a name that brings hope for the unknown times ahead. Let us name them that will bring hope for the difficulties that will lie ahead of each one of us. And let us say, as Abraham himself said when he went down from the mountain of that deliverance, Yahweh Jireh, God will see to it. God will provide.